Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chapter 5, Antya Lila, the continuing discussion of the wonderful glories of Nityananda's eternal associates. And yesterday we heard about Parameshwari Das and Dhananjaya Pandit and Balaram and Yaranath Kavichandra and Jagadish Pandit, Jyotir Dham. Now this devotee we're hearing about today is another Pandit, practically in all cases. The associates of Nityananda and Gauranga were all Brahmins because they are also Brahmins. They're both the sons of Brahmins. Nitai's father is Harai Pandit from Ekachakra. And Pandit Mishra, Jagannath Mishra, was also a Pandit, the father of Nimai Pandit. So these are all the glories of these Pandit Brahmins, eternal associates of the Lord. And it's told that in the Shastras in Gaudiya Vaishnava literature that talks about the dual sarups that one may have or one may attain by desire. To have one form in Krishna Leela, one form in Gaur Leela. The books of our Mahajans, our Gaudiya Mahajans are telling us, although it's not universally presented by all we don't so much see this idea in the writings of Six Goswamis about, but it's kind of an obvious conclusion that the Lord's pastimes are eternal, so his servants and associates must also be there, and aspiring sadhakas who want to enter his leela and serve him eternally, there must be some facility for them to attain a suitable sarup to serve and assist the Lord in his gaur leela. So the subsequent acharyas after the Six Goswamis, they often discuss this concept of having a sarup in Gaur Leela. Whereas the Six Goswamis, they talk about the Manjari sarup and Madhura Bhav, Brajabhav, or possibly a Sakha, a friend of Krishna's. These are the two general positions that have been presented. Although Lord Chaitanya came to savor and relish the Charabhakti, Braja Charabhakti Ras, and he was relishing all those rasas through the means of, or through the association of his mother and brother and friends, etc. But primarily the sadhakas in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they all fall in the line of Gopi Bhav or Manjari Bhav. And there are few exceptions where someone follows the idea of worshipping Krishna and Balaram, and there are some few scriptures describing that and a few lines of parampara which one can align himself with if that is his heart's position or his aspired for body. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, several others, have described that one can also attain and be awarded, given by the Lord, a form in Gaur Leela. And when they give descriptions of those forms, that they say that one should meditate on oneself being a Nitya Kishore Brahmin of Navadvip, 13 years old, 13, 14, and the eternal Navadvip Leela of Lord Gauranga. So in Lord Gauranga's Leela, he doesn't take sannyas and Nitya Leela. And his Astikali Leela of Gauranga, there's no sannyas, no puri, and traveling in South India. There's only Nitya Navadvip Dham, Navadvip Mandal. And so there he's always a young person. He's married, he has two wives there. In the spiritual world, he has two wives, Vishnupriya and Lakshmi Priya. They're his eternal associates. And all of his associates that want to be his servants, they're Brahmins. So it's quite appropriate when we're reading about Gaur Leela of 500 years ago that we're hearing all about the Brahmins, especially. And we ourselves can also be one of those servants of the Lord in his Leelas and having a Kaishura Brahmin form. So that's, we're hearing about all these Brahmins, and so Brahmins are very much part of Gaur Leela. This is Pandit Purushottam, Pandit Purushottama Navadvipe Janma Nityananda Sarupera Mahabhritya Marma. Pandit Purushottam took birth in Navadvip Janam. He was a confidential servant of Nityananda Sarup Mahabhritya Marma. He was a Britya, of course, means servant. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabhya Britya. There is one supreme controller, Sri Krishna, and everyone else is his servant, Britya. So he's a Mahabritya. He's a very, very great and wonderful servant of the Lord. And it says he was a Marma. I don't know, I guess Marma means confidential servant. But Marma also means humorous. It means joking. The word Marma means humor or joking. So I'm not sure if that's long A or short, but the word, similar word, maybe you can, I don't know if you have a Sanskrit dictionary, but it says Mahabhritya Marma, that he was a great servant of Nityananda. So he's fortunate. Let's examine the specialities of this particular associate. He was born actually in Navadvip Mandal. And other associates in Nityananda were born in other parts of Bengal, East and West Bengal, East Bengal, what we call Bangladesh now, and other parts of West Bengal. So not all of them were born specifically in Navadvip. And there's some verses also in Chaitanya Bhagavat. It says that the followers of Gaur Nitai took birth in different countries, and then they came together to join the Lord's pastimes in Navadvip and also in Puri. Many went to Puri, not all. So he's one of the fortunate ones. He's a Dham Vasi. He was born directly in the Dham, Pandit Purushottam. And he has these qualities of being a great servant. He's not talking about his Parama Jyotir Dham or his Prema Rasa Maya or his Prema Rasa Maha Unmata or his Nityananda Jivan or his Nityananda Vilas Vigraha or his Nityananda Vallave Kanta, or it's not saying he's Parama Shanta and Danta, and not saying that he's Parama Bhagavan, and that his pran is Kayo Mano Vakya, and pran is all Nityananda. It's simply saying he's a servant. He's a great servant. That itself is a perfection. Whether one has the qualities of shanta and peacefulness and danta self-control, or he's effulgently decorated with mellows of love of God, obviously they are. They're eternal associates. But what the author wants to emphasize here is he was the servant. And that itself is a perfection, to be a servant, servant of the servant of the servant. Generally, in the material world, people aspire for the highest position. They want to be the top, or the best, or the leader, or the winner, or the controller. That analogy, that example we've given before from Prabhupada's life, it's so nice to remember one spiritual master. I find that invariably my thoughts turn to Prabhupada with some anecdote that's relevant to the subject matter. So for Prabhupada-friendly audience, they would probably appreciate hearing that gentle reminders of Prabhupada on a regular basis. I know I do. So the point we're discussing is that in the material world, everyone wants to be on top. They want to be the best and get the topmost position. Here's an example of that from Prabhupada's life. When he went to Tokyo to negotiate with Dai Nippon printing press about the Bhagavatam printing, then he sat in a long oval-shaped table with 15 executives, Japanese executives, and they all introduced themselves one by one to Swamiji. Srila Prabhupada presented their card and said, "I'm director of publications, Toshi Shushikawa, and my name is, I'm the CEO, my name is Fuku Fikifaku." whatever their names are, and they gave their different cards. I am head of this in different departments. I am in charge of binding, and they had all the sales. And so they gave the cards, were all stacked up in front of Prabhupada. They took a ceremonial Japanese bow as they came next to Prabhupada and offered their card. Swamiji, this is my card. And then the CEO stepped out to discuss some crucial dealing about the money with some of his financial department heads, and it left some of the lower echelon leaders there remaining at the table that were simply involved with the actual production, not the finances. So it's the chief executive officer, the owner of the company, and his financial people, they stepped out for a private session and left Prabhupada alone with the lower echelon leaders of that company. So then Prabhupada, he asked them, he said, listen, I want to ask one of you, how long you've been working with this company? And he says, 5 years. And he said, what is your goal? What is your goal in life? What do you desire? What are you aspiring for? And then he got up and he walked over to the stack of cards. And he looked through for his calling card, his introduction card, and he took it out and he put it on top. And he said, Swamiji, I want to be on top. I want to be on top of this company. I want to be the in charge someday. That's my hope and dream. If not here, then with my own company in the future. So this summarizes the whole material world. Everyone wants to be on top. Top dog. So what's the glory of being a top dog? It's who's below you. If you're the top dog, that means below you are the lower dogs. So you're the top of all the dogs. But still, it doesn't exclude the fact that you're a dog, simply running after the bone of the material enjoyment. Now, let's look at the devotee in this comparison of the aspiration of the materialist wanting to be the master. He wants to be the master controller. Master control switch they have on some computers or whatever, machines, the master control switch, master volume. So we want to be the controller. This is the general scenario and modus operandi in the material world and society and business together. Now, if you look at this society, the Vaishnav Raja Sabha, the assembly of Vaishnavas, the aspiration and the desire is something different. They don't want to be on top. They don't want to be the top dog. They want to be the bottom dog. In fact, they want to be dogs. They want to be the dog of their spiritual master. And they even sing about it. They want it so much. They want so much to be a lowly, humble dog sitting at the door of their spiritual master waiting for a scrap of prasadam that they even sing about it in poetry. They glorify the concept in Bengali, the choicest Bengali kavi. They say, Ami Vaishnava Kukur. Ami Vaishnava Kukur. I am a Vaishnava Kukur. I am a dog of Vaishnava. O Vaishnava Thakur. O hey Vaishnava Thakur. Ami Vaishnava Kukur. You're a Thakur, I'm a Kukur. Thakur means a great, exalted, honorable, venerable human being. In this case, a most exalted, highly respectable, and advanced Siddha Vaishnava. It's called Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur. You are a Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I am Kukur. I'm a Kukur. I am the dog. So dog means that you're a servant. The master says, fetch this, fetch that, run for this, run for that. And we run. To signify that and symbolize that position of the Vaishnavas, they adopt a collar around their neck, separating their head from their heart. Because when the head combines with the heart, there's problems. It's called mind over heart. Heart over mind. Heart is the ruling principle of the cultured person. And speculative mentality is the ruling principle of the non-devotee. Devotee is a bhakta. A bhakta functions from the heart region. So when he puts the collar around his neck, it symbolizes that he is a master known as Guru, Gurudev. And collar means like a dog. When you want to control or contain or restrain a dog, you put a collar around his neck and tie a rope around the collar. You pull the rope, which pulls the collar, which stops the dog without choking his Adam's apple. You simply tie a rope around his neck and then so there has to be a displacement of the force of the pulling the rope, which pulls the collar, which is a wide thing and restrains his movements. So our collar is like a dog collar. The guru symbolizes that we're surrendered, that we're a britya. We're not a Ishvara, we're britya. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabya Britya. In our society of Vaishnavas, in our world, our Vaishnava world, there's only one Ishvara. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radha Govinda, Sarvakarna Karnam, Govindam, Adi Purusham, Tamam Bhajami. So he's the one Ishvara, and we are the many. Ara, Sabya, all sub, everyone else is a Britya servant. And this is the most desirable position for the Vaishnava, to become Krishnera Nitya Das, Das, Anudas. Gopi Bhartu Palakamalir Das, Das, Anudas. Servant of the servant of the servant, as Prabhupada says in one place, 1,000 times removed. In other words, you know, if the number 10 represents servant, then 10 to the 1,000th power, or 10 to the 10,000x or something. A servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. How many times can you say it? In other words, very far downline servant. So Prabhupada summarizes that extreme humility, that far-reaching position of the absolute zenith of humble service by saying, a servant of the servant of the servant 1,000 times removed, which means after you say the word servant of a servant 1,000 times, that's where I take up my position. That's my locus standi, that's my position. And from there I function. It's absolute zero. They have these terms in chemistry and absolute zero. So this is the absolute zero point. And he's glorified for the last 500 years in Bengali at Pandit Purushottam. He was such a pundit, so learned and so educated, and such a Chaturvedi Vidvan Brahman, fully decorated with full knowledge of the Vedas. They realized that being a servant of Nityananda, this is life's perfection. This is the sum and substance of human existence. To be a humble servant of Krishna, Bhagavan, Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Nityananda. So he's being glorified. Mahabritya Marma. He was a confidential servant. Very great Britya. So being a Britya means being great. So when we come to ISKCON and we put our calling cards on the table in front of Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I'm so-and-so, I have MBBS, and I'm so-and-so, I have engineering degree, I'm so-and-so, I have computer science degree, and we pile them all up, and then Prabhupada asks, he said, so what do you aspire for in Krishna consciousness? What is your aim and objective of your life? Then you go and you find your card and you say, oh, Prabhupada, see, all these cards, I would have put my card on the bottom of this whole pile of 5,000 disciples. You have 5,000 calling cards on your desk here in your Oval Office of ISKCON. And I want to put my card on the bottom of the stack of 5,000. So somehow, someday, maybe you'll call me and you'll go through 4,999 servants. And if you still find any service left, or if you think you can find a way to engage this useless, fallen, lowly one, then I'll be waiting there under that stack to stand up and render some service. This is Mahabritya. Mahabritya. So Pandit Purushottam Ki Jai. So everyone can say his name. Pandit Purushottam Ki Jai. He was a great pundit because he was a servant of Purushottam Sri Krishna. Leela Purushottam Sri Krishna Gauranga. So we understand something of his lakshana and his exaltation by, so being that seemingly lowly position of a britya or a humble servant, how did that interface with Nityananda? Purve janra gare Nityanandera vasati janhara prasade haya Nityanande mate. Nityananda had stayed before in his house, Purve gar Nityananda vas. By the mercy of Pandit Purushottam, one's mind would be fixed on Nityananda. Janhara prasade haya Nityananda mati. Well, that's wonderful. This shows the power of the devotees. We talk about mystic power, how the Ashtanga yogis, they have these powers, these Ashta cities, Mahima city and Lagima city and Prapti city and Lagu city, and some become lighter than the lightest, float in the sky, fly in the air, Lagima, or Anu city becomes so tiny you can pass through a keyhole, as Prabhupada says. Reduce your form to so small you can go through a keyhole. Or becomes so, Mahima city becomes so large, become as big as a mountain. Of course, Hanuman exhibited a lot of these mystic powers in the service of Ramchandra. He was a great mystic. All devotees have mystic powers, but Hanuman displayed most all of them. One of them is called Kamavayasita city, to attain whatever you desire. And one is called Prapti city, to acquire something from a distant place. When Lakshman was wounded in Sri Lanka, or what it was called, Sri Lanka, no, it was called Ceylon, no, Sri Lanka, in the battle with Ravana, then he was unconscious, and he required some medicine from Gandamarana Hill of a particular type. And Hanuman, he went and got that. And it flew through the air, is what's being described, and carried it on his back. So that shows a lot of potency there. You can acquire something from far place. Of course, he physically went there. But he's carried a whole mountain. So he himself must have become mountainous proportions. Because he was human-like size, ordinarily. Ramchandra was human-like size. He wasn't like 50 feet high or 100 feet high. Whatever height he was, I don't know. We hear in the Mahabharata that Arjuna and Krishna were 10 feet tall or 15 or whatever. We hear things like that, I've heard. So Ramachandra is living in Treta Yuga, so well, maybe also like that. But generally they describe you as human form, like something close. And Hanuman wasn't walking around like 300 feet high monkey. That's what I understand. The point is that devotees have mystic power. And one thing is, one mystic power, there's eight Ashta cities that are popularly known. But if you read Yoga Sutras, there's about 120 yoga cities. And some of them, there's about 40 or 50 of them are mentioned in Padma Puran. And they're not so, these are the major, powerful, extraordinary ones. But one of them is to read another person's mind. And these are very, basically fairly simple ones, not very difficult to acquire. Reading someone else's mind. I even have phrases like that in English. I read your mind. Oh, you read my mind. Have you ever heard this? Someone says, oh, you read my mind. That may be just by coincidence they caught some idea of what you were thinking by putting some points together. Or maybe they intuitively knew that by some strange stroke of mercy from the Supersoul. But some people can actually, at will, at any time, with anyone, read someone's mind. And oftentimes, when they have this talent or read someone's mind, that's one, it's a very common one, then people often they're born with that and they see that they have that, and then they exploit that by going into magic. They go into magic or magic shows and make money with their talent that they somehow inherited from their last lives, tapasya, austerity of some sort. And then another mystic power is to control other people's minds. So often people have this power and they use it, and they can control in different ways by thoughts. Simply by thoughts they can control with having this power, and they can also use voice. By voice they can control people's minds. It's kind of like a hypnotism. So it's told that Hitler had this power of mass hypnotism, that he would speak to the German people, and he was almost took over the entire world. If you know anything about world history, he was one of the most successful demoniac atheistic conquerors of the modern world. His empire was very vast. So how was he able to get so much unbelievable support and fanatical surrender? Was because he had this mystic power. So he didn't use it for a very good cause. Generally, people become proud when they have some powers, and it gets to their head, and they exploit it for their own self-aggrandizement. Low puja and pratishtha, control, lordship, mastership, godhood. But he had this power to fix people's minds on Nityananda. So he could control people's minds and send them to God. So what does this mean? That means that devotees, if someone was living there 500 years ago and they became attracted to Nityananda, his teachings, his persona and his pastimes, and wanted to be part of his entourage or be part of his service circle, then they may be conditioned souls living 500 years ago, and they would like to be fixed in their devotion, in their sadhana, but their minds, like everyone's mind from time immemorial, is always moving in many directions, like the wind can change course at any time. You watch the flag, sometimes it's blowing from the west for 2 hours, and all of a sudden it's blowing from the north. Total turnaround. Then it goes to the east, and where is the wind going? It's coming from all the different directions. If anyone's ever been sailing, you can see that often happens. You're tacking in one direction, all of a sudden you lose all the wind, and you're floundering. It's called floundering. And then your sails drop, and then you have to figure out which way winds go. You don't sail. And so there's no motor, it's only wind power. That means sailing, means no motor, real sailing, a motor bus not sailing. At any rate, that's the wind, and the mind is compared to that in Bhagavad Gita, Chanchalahi Manah Krishna. It's like the wind. So this person living 500 years ago may be wanting his mind to be fixed on Nityananda. So then he hears, oh, there's a great devotee of Nityananda. His name is Pandit Purushottam, and he has some very special powers. You should go see him, take darshan, and he can bless you. What are his special powers? He has the power to fix your mind on Nityananda Sarup. Acha? Anybody's mind? Yeah, everybody's mind. I don't think he can fix my mind on Nityananda. Because you don't know my mind, how crazy and rascal it is. For every 1,000 good ideas my mind produces, it produces 1,000,000 bad ideas. No. Pandit Purushottam, he can turn your mind around, as he says, spin your mind around. They usually use that phrase in relation to Maya. Someone meets some woman and says, oh, she spun my mind around, turned my life around. So this is a wonderful power. And so these qualities are wonderful. Of course, would we ever have such power to turn someone's mind towards God? Who would know? Only God would know. And that would be certainly a gift of God to have that kind of power. Haya Nityananda Mati, that he, the Mati, the opinion, the thinking, the thought, the intelligence, the vichar, the consideration, was turned, his mind, whole mind was turned towards Nityananda. So this person, hypothetical, that I mentioned, that was aspiring for steadiness and bhakti as a servant of Nityananda Gaur, he approached Pandit Purushottam and begged for his mercy. Mercy means prasad. So he says here he has Chandhara Prasad Nityananda Mati. Now let's turn the clock ahead to today, 2012, January 25th, in Radhakund or any Kund or anywhere. And we are also suffering from demented and deranged and disturbed and distracted minds. And we want relief, and we want to somehow fix our minds on God. Like the ninth canto Bhagavatam, Amrish Maharaj, that's the first thing he did. He realized that this is the first thing. Nothing else is going to work unless I do this. You can do so many things, but if you don't do this first thing, then everything else is helpful, but ultimately useless. If everything you do doesn't lead to this, then whatever you do is useless. So he understood the first principle is to do this and everything else will follow suit. What is that? Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor Vajam Shivai Kuntav Gunar Navarnane. The mind. The mind moves our world. And the mind moves us in the world. So Savai Mana Krishna Padara, he fixed his mind absolutely, unequivocally, all the time, at every moment, on the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna Charan Dhyan. Dhyan, Dhruvanu Smriti Samadhi, totally fixed. And once the mind is fixed somewhere, then what happens to the body? It follows the mind. The mind follows the body. Excuse me, the body follows the mind. If there's a will, there's a way. Will means mind, way means body. So if there's a mind thinking of a particular, expressing a particular will, then that will expressed by the mind will be carried out and implemented by the instrument known as the body, the Panch Gyanindriya and Panch Karmindriya, five working senses and five knowledge acquiring senses, which comprise the body, will effectively cooperate to fulfill the will of the mind. If there's a will, there's a way. So now we're suffering, as I mentioned, this way. Our mind is not so agreeable most of the time. So there are many great Vaishnavas and Pandits living amongst us, even today. And as we hear that he was so had this power of turning, by his mercy, people's minds to be turned to God or turned to Nityananda, there are people in the world like that. They're known as pure devotees. Pure devotees of the Lord. At least they have this mystic power. It is a mystic power. As I mentioned, it's mentioned in Shastra. It's one of the supplementary or secondary mystic powers to control someone's mind. To turn someone's mind somewhere means you control it. Because certainly no one can control their own minds. As we mentioned from the Gita, Arjun. But the pure devotee, backed by all the unlimited power Yogeshwara Sri Krishna, Yati Yogeshwara Krishna, Tatra Shiva Jayabhatir, there's Partha Dhanurdhara. Krishna is the greatest master yogi. And if he uses one as an instrument, one becomes his surrendered pure devotee, then the miracles will flow. The minds will spin. Lives will change. And one's mind will be turned towards Krishna, which means one's mind is controlled, because now Maya is controlling the conditioned soul's mind and making him run to Maya. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moh, Matsarya. But if the mind gets controlled and turned and changed, then the mind runs towards Krishna. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Hearing and chanting. So that's mystic power in action. Every time a pure devotee preaches to someone and convinces them or encourages them or brings them to the point of turning their mind, because now what is our position of the conditions, the Bhadajivas, Nitya Bhadajivas? Anadir by Krishna Bahir Mukh. Anadir Krishna Bahir Mukh. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jiva Tattva. The Nityavada Jiva is Anadir Krishna Bahir Mukh. Anadir. From beginningless time, Anadi, there's no beginning. We can't find a point. 1929, I turned away from Krishna. Today, as 500 years ago, there were great pure devotees of the Lord, of Nityananda and Gaur. They're also alive today. And we need the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Kripakaro, Kripakaro, Vaishnava Kripa. We are never beyond requiring the mercy of Vaishnavas. It's a daily desire, daily need. Like they say, the MDR. They have something like that in food or something. Minimum daily requirements of vitamin A, B, C, D. So we have a mercy MDR. A Vaishnava has an MDR, a minimum daily requirement of mercy. What is it? Every day I need mercy. Our minimum daily requirement is 500 kilograms of mercy. And let's say, yeah, 500 kilograms. So every devotee weighs about 60 kilograms. Well, I'd say our MDR mercy, our Kripa MDR, our minimum daily requirement for mercy is 300 kilos. 300 kilos every day. We need 300 kilos of mercy. Well, that's a heavy MDR. What does that mean? That means we have to get the mercy every day of five different Vaishnavas. They weigh around 60, 70 kilos. So four or five Vaishnavas every day, we should get some mercy. How do you get mercy from the Vaishnavas? By serving them, by remembering them, by praying to them, by seeing them, by worshiping them, by hearing from them, by glorifying them. This is how we get connected with the Vaishnavas. When you're connected with the Vaishnavas, then the mercy flows. When you're disconnected, there's no flow of mercy. Because a devotee, what are the Vaishnavas? What are they described as? What type of murti? Kripa, Shakti, Murti. They are Tatastha Shakti, Jiva Shakti. And when they are aligned with God, the Kripa Sindhu, the Kripa Sagar, Radharani and Krishna, then they become agents of mercy. What do they say in Christianity? Angels of mercy. And the Mother Teresa's crew, they said, angels of mercy, or mercy mission. Maybe you hear these Christians. That's very wonderful and sweet in English. Idea and concept. Angels of mercy means the mercy is coming from somewhere else. Angels are not walking around. You don't see too many angels walking around the earth planet. Actually, angels are what we call Gandharvas. They're human-like form and a very subtle human-like form, and they have wings and they fly. That's a Gandharva. So they knew that, but they don't have the word Gandharva in the Bible, so they say angels. Guardian angel, they say angels are blessed. In Christianity, you have the concept, I have a guardian angel, there's somebody looking over me. Not specifically God, of course, he's always there as a Shakshi witness, but they would say guardian angel. And this means that sattvic good people, the demigods, the Gandharvas are demigods, they do look after the devotees. So there is some substance to these things, but the Christians can't trace it out. When we come into the Vedic paradigm and expose ourselves to the wide gamut of Vedic knowledge, then we can see how everything makes a lot of sense and fits together. When the Christians talk about my guardian angel, there is such a thing. They really exist, and they're called Gandharvas, and they're demigods, and they're very pious and favorable religious personalities. And when one becomes a Christian or a Hindu or a real Vaishnava, a real devotee of the Lord, then these Gandharvas, they help him. And they bless him and they guide him. So they do act as guards for the devotees, and this is described. So these great devotees, angels of mercy, agents of mercy, Kripa Shakti Murti, this is what we describe devotees as, they can be merciful. So whenever we meet a devotee, we should pray, please fix my mind on Nityananda. It doesn't hurt to ask for mercy and beg for mercy. That's the whole principle of why people keep buying sweepstakes tickets. They keep buying what they call lottery tickets or sweepstake tickets for 1 rupee because they hope someday they'll win the lottery and get 1 million rupees. So we're not playing, we're not gambling, we don't advocate it. But as we go to every Vaishnava and actually sincerely pray for mercy, but generally we're not sincere in our prayer, nor do we really want mercy. But we cast that phrase here and there with no backing of sincerity or an intention to do anything if we do get the mercy. But when we're really in a prayerful and submissive and surrendered mood and feeling the dire necessity, feeling the absolute dire necessity to receive mercy from the compassionate, kind, and loving Vaishnavas, whoever they are and wherever they are, then that type of inner bhav and transparent sincerity resonates a particular vibration, which the kind-hearted and beneficent devotees can perceive. The genuineness of your presentation and the genuineness of your delivery and your words when you speak, and they reciprocate accordingly. It can't be faked. Real things can never be faked. You can't fake bhakti. You can't fake humility. You can fool some people some of the time with your false humility or false bhakti, but you can't fool the true Vaishnava or Krishna. So this is Pandit Purushottam's wonderful glories. And Nityananda stayed in his house. So God likes to stay in the house of someone who is a humble servant of the servant of the servant. So what does it mean to stay in the house? It says, Purve Janra Gare Nityananda Vas. Gare, where is our soul living? Our soul is living in the house of this body. Body is a shell, a house for the soul. And Nityananda Vas. So, this we would love Nityananda to reside in our body. So we can pray to Pandit Purushottam that we can also become very humble servants of Nityananda and Lord Sri Krishna, and that the house of our heart and the house of our mind will be fully occupied by the ever-presence, ever-merciful and blissfully ecstatic, loving presence of Nityananda Sarup. Pandit Purushottam ki. Yeah. Okay.